Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Ben Cohen. He's a sports reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and his new book, The Hot Hand, takes a look at the mystery and science of streaks, and we hear about them a lot. An NBA player develops a hot hand behind the three-point arc. Someone's on a roll at the blackjack table. The stock market keeps gaining or losing points. Ken Jennings wins 74 Jeopardy games in a row. Ben, this book introduced me to someone I'd never heard of before, Mark Turmel, who created an arcade game, NBA Jams. How does he figure into all of this?
So Mark Turmel is this brilliant video game designer who, when he was a kid, he loved three things. He loved basketball, and he loved video games, and he loved fire. He was a bit of a pyromaniac, and he would actually combine those three childhood loves into the biggest hit of his life. That game was called NBA Jam. And for kids of a certain age, and I was that age, but also like Steph Curry and LeBron James were that age, NBA Jam was ubiquitous. It was everywhere. We played it all the time. What I did not realize until writing this book was that it was all of us. It wasn't just me. It was everybody. So NBA Jam was one of the most successful, lucrative arcade games ever made. In less than a year, it made $1 billion, that's billion with a B, in quarters alone. It was this monster success. And there were a few reasons for that. It was a basketball game. It was fun. The announcer said funny words like boom shakalaka. But really what everyone wanted to hear when they played NBA Jam were three words. He's heating up, and then another three words. He's on fire. And what happened when you were on fire is that you could not miss. The basketball would turn into a fireball. And what Mark Turmel did, what this childhood pyromaniac did, was he taught us how fun it was to play with fire. He single-handedly brainwashed a generation of impressionable young minds into believing in this concept of the hot hand. And many of us would never be convinced otherwise.
One of my dad's favorite sayings when I was growing up was, nothing succeeds like success. And the definition of hot hand is fairly abstract. Is my dad's saying about as close as we can come?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think it's when success does to lead more success. I mean, that's kind of the simplest way to put it. Now, of course, like, there are differences. In basketball, it's when you do make those few shots in a row and you feel more likely to make your next shot. You can't miss. You're in the zone. You're on fire, as Mark Turmel would say. But it's not just basketball. And I think that's probably what your dad was referring to. Like, this is about human behavior. And I think we are all familiar with this sensation of the hot hand, of when success leads to more success. And it's those times in our lives when we are on a roll and nothing can stop us. And we tend to remember them because if we take advantage, they can kind of elevate our careers and sometimes even change our lives.
I was shocked to learn at the sheer amount of research that's been done on hot hands over the last 40 years, but a group of Harvard University undergrads really changed the way we think about streaks. What did they find?
Yeah, they were really interesting to me because, as you said, they were undergrads. They were not graduate students or PhD students or professors. They were kids in their college dorm. And they came along about 5 years ago when, 30 years after this first classic paper of the hot hand came along and said that there was no such thing as the hot hand, what these kids were able to do was get access to new data that nobody had ever seen before. And what they found was that when we do have the hot hand, our behavior changes. The hot hand warps the behavior, not just of us, but of everybody around us. So in basketball, it's when you're hot, you take longer shots and riskier shots and crazier shots, shots that have a lower probability of actually going in. But when you control for that shift in probability, you're able to actually see whether you do make more shots. And what these kids found was that there was such a thing as a slight hot hand effect. When you looked at those shots that were harder shots, we actually were slightly more likely to make them when we felt hot. And so that was kind of irresistible to me, this idea that these kids were getting access to data that nobody ever had before, and it was telling them things that nobody had ever heard before. And that has kind of changed our thinking about the hot hand over the last few years.
I'm sure a lot of us have had the experience where a bunch of guys pick college basketball games at a pool at work, and then one guy's wife, who doesn't even watch basketball, fills out a bracket. Lo and behold, her picks are turning into winners more than those of us who actually follow the sport. So how do you tell the difference between a hot hand and just dumb luck?
I think that's one of the mysteries of it. I mean, I think the hot hand is there's something fundamental about the hot hand where circumstance and talent collide. And you do need to get lucky. Like, I think that's really important to think about. It doesn't just happen. But to me, there's a difference between just a lucky streak and someone taking their talent and combining it with circumstance that bends their way and then taking advantage of those circumstances. So, like, you know, when I play basketball, maybe I get lucky a few times and make a few shots in a row, but that's just pure dumb luck. Like, I'm terrible at basketball, and I know that. When Steph Curry does this, like, there's something else that's happening there. That's not dumb luck. That's actually skill. Like, he has control of his situation. And so I think the difference between dumb luck and skill is sort of the difference between me and Steph Curry when it comes to basketball.
And then I also found it interesting, you pointed out how sometimes these streaks can make baseball umpires make bad calls, and I was fascinated with that research. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, it's sort of the opposite of the hot hand. It's not quite the cold hand, it's something else. When a basketball player makes three shots in a row, everybody thinks he's making his fourth shot. When you walk into a casino, and I'll get to baseball umpires, I promise, when you walk into a casino and you see a roulette wheel land on red three times in a row, what research shows is that most people bet on black the next time. The hot hand is in basketball, but in the casino it's called the gambler's fallacy. It's kind of the opposite. And the gambler's fallacy also applies really widely. It applies to asylum judges, and it applies to loan officers, and it applies to baseball umpires. Because what happens to baseball umpires is that if they call two close strikes in a row, what economists have now shown is that they're much less likely to call a third strike. They are trying to even out the streak in their own mind. Like, they know that, like, three strikes in a row is unlikely, and because they have called two close strikes, they should even out the odds a little bit. And that can be, anyway, as dangerous of a bias as the hot hand. They're sort of related, they're kind of opposite, but they're powerful. They could be costly if not used the right way. And so, you know, basketball players take advantage of the hot hand, so do baseball players, but they're also at the mercy of other people making decisions. And that is when the gambler's fallacy kicks into play.
Well, sometimes people can see patterns where they don't exist, and that sort of relates to the gambler's fallacy. You use the example of Spotify. So how do people sometimes misread patterns?
Well, we do it all the time. Pure randomness is really hard for us to wrap our minds around, and we try to invent causes to explain randomness. And Spotify and even Apple had to deal with this a few years ago, because when we create randomly generated playlists, when we shuffle our music, sometimes that means hearing the same artist twice in a row, or even the same song twice in a row. That's how randomness works. But that's not how we want randomness to work. And so what Spotify kept hearing from customers was, your songs, your randomly generated playlists are not actually random, because I'm hearing the same song twice in a row. So what they had to do was they had to change the way their algorithms work. So now if you make a playlist of five different artists, they will evenly space those artists over the course of the playlist. So what they actually had to do is something that Apple and Steve Jobs himself had to do a few years earlier. They had to make their playlist less random to feel more random. And to me, that ties in with the hot hand so nicely. The reason why we believe so firmly in the hot hand, or we were thought to anyway, is that we see patterns where they don't exist. And that is a lesson that applies far beyond basketball and far beyond any of these academics who have studied the hot hand for the last four decades.
And sometimes when people try to harness a hot hand, it can also backfire. So how can you avoid that pitfall?
Well, being aware of it, I think, is important. And trying to figure out which industries allow for a hot hand and which do not. And to me, it just comes back to control. It's one of, when you have agency, we think that we can get a hot hand, but when we recognize that we were at the mercy of chance, when we're investing in the stock market, for example, or like if you're a farmer and a good year depends on the weather, essentially, and that's it, like that's really important. And so there's a difference between chasing patterns and trusting principles. And I think it's important to recognize where there is a hot hand, but it can be equally important to recognize when there is no such thing as a hot hand.
All right. It's Ben Cohen. The book is The Hot Hand, The Mystery and Science of Streaks. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Ben, this is great. You can also check them out in the Wall Street Journal, too. I love reading you in there. Ben, thanks for joining us today to talk about your book.
Thanks so much, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
When you're hot, you're hot. And when you're not, you're not. Put out all the money.